Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden, and I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to the Chuck and Julie Show. Chuck Bonnivale and Julie Hayden, truth straight up. I'm here at the Chuck and Julie Show World Headquarters. Chuck, as you can see, is broadcasting from the Glendale Cherry Creek Chronicle World Headquarters. The newspaper goes out tomorrow, so this is a busy time. But a lot of stuff to talk about. We've got Greg Lopez, GOP gubernatorial candidate, grassroots candidate, coming up at 3:15. And then at 3:30, Daniel Greenfield from Pent Front Page Magazine. Basically, he has a great column essentially explaining why things are all screwed up. And it's titled "The Permanent Shortage of Everything." Kind of depressing, but important.
Show brought by, who are our sponsors?
Oh, our sponsors. Thank you, Chuck. Julie McCallan, Dr. Julie McCallan with Denver Cynogenics, and also happytrees.co. Great company, can take care of all of your landscaping needs, no matter how big or how small. We use them here, and I just love them. Happytrees.co. They're great. Want to start out by telling everybody, don't throw your masks away. Joe Biden today says that we need to be spending more money because a second pandemic is coming. It's coming. Anthony Fauci says it will be here by fall. Coincidentally, Chuck, right about the time the midterms fall.
Then they can make it easier for everybody to vote by mail, and they'll supply the answers to who you should vote for by their ballot harvest.
A second pandemic, what the heck? That's just get rid of it. That's just let the Democrats and Joe Biden, they could just tell us what the results would be, right? And then we can have, because the January 6th committee there, I think this is pretty funny. They are taking a break. They say that they've got so much new information to go through that they have to go through it. So they're not going to be holding any more hearings until sometime in July, date to be determined. They haven't figured that out yet.
Maybe
people care about inflation. I don't know. But what is Biden going to do? I think he's screwed. He's proposing to that Congress is trying to blame it on Congress now. So it's going to be Putin's fault. People didn't buy that. Now, Chuck, it's going to be Congress's fault because he's asking Congress for a holiday from the federal gas tax, which is about 18 cents. The Democrats who are saying, no, they don't like it. My guess is because you and I were talking earlier about why. Nancy Pelosi is saying, well, it's just a gimmick and the oil companies will just keep the profits. But I think it goes right back to this is not an accident, right? That, they want high gas prices and they're going to have all the Green New Deal people screaming at them if they do something to make gas prices reasonable. What do you think?
I think that there's nothing you can do. Releasing strategic oil reserves as he drains that bank account, that'll be gone. The gas tax, I think it's a good idea to get rid of it, but Democrats never want to have a tax holiday. I think that's bad, bad karma and bad,
Well, and the other thing I think he's going to do is, from what I was reading, he's going to try to say, well, the states should do it then. So he's going to shift the blame to the states, anything to make it not be his fault. But I don't think that's going to work because I think states need the gas tax, right? States like Colorado.
There's the roads and everything else, whatever they got for transportation. But
right. Back to, Leo is talking, this is a great comment from Leo, back to the pandemic that Joe Biden assures us is coming just in time for the midterms. They'll hand out free masks since they vote Democrat, your body, your vaccine. So
I was driving to work and looked to my left and there's a woman in a big truck and so forth, alone with her mask on. So she'll be happy to know. She's been wearing her mask religiously and it'll be back in fashion again pretty soon.
I don't know. I think he's going to have a hard time with that again because of inflation. I was looking at some statistics in Denver, the city of Denver, the mortgage rate for an average house in Denver right now, the average mortgage owner is paying $3,394 a month. I'm like, whoa. And that's 55% higher than last May. So if you bought a house in May, this May, May 2022, the real estate article I was reading said you paid 1.5 times more for it than you would have paid if you bought it last year. So in response to that, JP Morgan, I saw, is laying off hundreds of people and transferring thousands of people from its mortgage lending department. So you see all these weird signs coming in. Another article I was reading said that some of the big tech companies are rescinding their job offers that they've made to recent graduates. So it's like a lot of these big-
That'd be great notice to get.
yeah, really. It's like, all right,
Mom, Dad, I got a job. Oh, no.
No, I don't. Well, you got to want, I mean, you know, all these people have been turning jobs down. What did Jared Polis say? Can't fill the swimming pools with lifeguards, enough lifeguards. So they're, I guess he's changing the overtime rules so that if you're a lifeguard, you can make time and a half now. I mean, or something, but it's kind of like, I don't know if that's going to work really. But I think it should tell you something. With the Democrats in control, crime is skyrocketing. We can't find baby food formula. You can't buy women's hygiene products, right? You can't even go swimming anymore because they don't have enough lifeguards at the swimming pool. And in the meantime, everything is, you know, Trump predicted this, so it's only going to get worse. We have Greg Lopez came on a little bit. Perfect. I was hoping he would. So we've got Greg with us right now. Hey, Greg,
hey,
welcome.
Greg, how you doing?
Yeah, welcome to the
show. Hey, guys. I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on today.
Yeah, well, you know, you're one of our favorites and have been, and wow, who would have thunk you've really got the Republican establishment all of Twitter. it just won't go away. KBB can't stand it, it's pretty amazing. So you must be really proud of the campaign you've run, and also having those nice Democrats there to give
help
you
out.
Yeah, you know what? As you know, guys, I've been working hard trying to build relationships and coalitions across the state and talking to people, you know, way before the election cycle. And so, you know, it's paying off. People are thinking, you know what? I am going to win the nomination. And it's obvious, you know, because they're showing, they're doing these mailers, they're doing these commercials. And, you know, I am going to be the candidate that's going to make Governor Polis a one-term governor. And I'm ready. You know, I think the whole state is ready. You were talking about it a little bit, Julie, about, you know, what's going on in our country and, you know,
right.
Just the inflation and everything. Everybody's fed up and everybody wants to change. And like you said, when the Democrats are in control, you know, crime goes up, the richer get richer and the poorer get poorer. And, you know, mandates and restrictions start happening. You know, it's just craziness. Colorado's broken.
Right.
Yeah, really
well,
is.
I mean, like I said, you can't. We were at the Westminster. We went, my son, we were going to go met a couple other kids there and their moms for a play date, right, at the Westminster Rec Center. They've got a great indoor
right.
pool there. And there was a sign there saying, yeah, don't even think about it. And we went in and the lady was like, they can't get enough lifeguards. So they've got this massive facility, but they only have enough lifeguards that they can only have 50 people in the place at a time. And I know at our HOA, they don't have a lifeguard. I'm like, what the heck is going on? What is Polis? I mean, we know that he destroyed hundreds and hundreds of small businesses, but now you can't even go swimming in the summer in Colorado.
I know. You know, I mean, the whole mindset, right, of, well, don't worry, we're going to send you a check. You don't need to work. You know, if you're on the payroll or if you've worked before, you're going to get a $500 check and now that type of stuff. It's craziness. Look, our government is upside down. You know, they're spending money they don't have. They're causing our quality of life to go down the tubes. And people are starting to ask those hard questions is, what is going on? Why is this happening in Colorado? And why is everything so out of kilter? And I think they're deciding and finally opening their eyes and say, you know what? It's got to be the people in charge. It's got to be the rich elitists that are causing all this. And it's a true statement. And so I think come November, it's going to be a totally different governor here in Colorado. And, you know, in the meantime, we've got to do what we can to improve our quality of life.
Well, let me ask you about this with it. I mean, as Chuck mentioned, the Republican establishment is freaking out because Democrat secret money is running commercials in Colorado, supporting, I guess the idea is the candidate that they would rather run against. And so you're getting some ads are running with you for you, some ads are running with Ron Hanks. But I think that the Democrats are seriously miscalculating. I mean, obviously, they must have some reason to think that Jared Polis may not be as invincible as everybody might have thought. But just like you said, to somehow think that the voters are then going to turn around and say, oh, well, Greg Lopez, no, we don't want to vote for him. I just think it's ridiculous. I think it would be a vote against Polis, too. I mean, I think they're miscalculating. What do you think?
Well, here's what, you know, like you were saying, if they were attacking my opponent, you know, the Republican establishment would be saying, well, yeah, of course they're attacking her because, you know, she's the strongest. They wouldn't say that she would be the weakest. Right. Because I'm not the establishment choice. I think what's happening is, you know, the Democrats are looking at the same poll numbers that we're looking at. You know, the polls are showing that, you know, I beat my opponent in a poll against the governor, that the governor is 6 points ahead of a generic Republican. And I'm not a generic Republican. You know, I'm everything but.
Yeah. Well, go ahead, Chuck.
That's really tremendous. And I think all your hard work and all the time you put in is really coming to fore. Do you have any debates, any last minute debates with Heidi, or did she ever debate you?
Well, supposedly the end, I'm going to tell you, no, we never debated because what we had were these little forums, right, where we both get asked the same question and we just get to answer the question, right, however we want to answer it. And it's just go back and forth. But my understanding is that there is going to be at least what they're calling a debate on the Dan Kaplis radio show on Monday, the day before the election at 4 o'clock.
There you go.
You know, she finally decided, okay, I will do one, but it's on radio, right? So once again, you know, Channel 9, Channel 4, all the other major outlets wanted to do one live, and for whatever reason, she wasn't willing to do it. I'm always willing to go wherever people get a chance to hear my voice and see me as it pertains to how I respond and how I look at the issues and those types of things. So, Chuck, I think it's going to be Monday at 4 o'clock on the Dan Kaplis Show.
There you go. For all the five people who haven't voted yet and haven't made up their mind.
Right.
You know, I think they're again, you know, I look at, and tell me what your sense is out there, because you're out there every day talking to people. But I think Heidi Ginnall wanted to run just a really low profile race and just stay low profile, not answer any questions, and hope that people would be annoyed at Jared Polis and see you as the grassroots candidate. And I think you look across the country, what's happening is grassroots are sweeping the country in many places, right? People, I think, relate establishment Republicans, and Dick Wadhams hated it when he's referred as rhinos, but people, I think, kind of link them with the Democrats, and people are like, we want something new. We want somebody who's going to fix our problems, not just go get rich off of them or ignore them and just accumulate more power. I mean, do you hear? So I think the landscape has changed, I guess, is what I'm saying, from maybe where it was even, you know, 6 months ago as this inflation gets crazy. What are you hearing any of that?
I am. Look, I'm hearing it everywhere I go. You know what? I travel the state and I hear it in people's voices. I see it in their eyes, you know, that, hey, look, everything that's going on right now is wrong. And you know what? To your point, I think a lot of people, at least, you know, the establishment and Heidi thought, you know what? Greg doesn't have a stronghold with the people. They really don't know him. You know, what they found out as they were going out into the state is, wait a minute, he's been out here before. He's been out here twice. You know, he knows these people. They know him. And they realize, you know, I have been working. You know, I have been out there. And so all of a sudden, you know, at the last minute, they were starting to realize, wait a minute, you know, we underestimated all his hard work. And so now they're scrambling, they're panicking. Everything that's happening today, right? And Chuck, you said it, right? They're panicking. They don't understand what they're going to do. They don't know what to do with me, you know, because they know I'm going to get the nomination. And then, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how well we come together, how well they support the actual candidate that wins. Only time will tell, but people are ready for a change. Look, at the assembly, Julie, I would tell you 60% of the people that attended the state assembly, the delegates, that was their first time to ever participate
in
any type of assembly before.
Yeah, my first time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and so.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so to your point, there's a lot of people that said enough. We've had it, right? We want grassroots people. We want people that work hard like Greg does. You know, he's one of us for all of us. You know, he struggles just like we do. He doesn't come from money. He can't write a $23 million check. You know, I mean, I can write it. You can't cash it, but I can definitely write it. You know, but those are the types of things that people are looking for, is a voice that they can actually connect with and someone that truly cares about them.
Well, the other thing,
as good a campaign as you've run with, you know, not huge amounts of money and stuff. Heidi has run maybe the worst campaign I've seen in a while. And I'm really not sure why she just apparently expected it to be handed to her. But it really has been, I think, Colorado polls, which you can't trust, but they awarded her the worst campaign in the last 40 years. So, as good as yours is, as poor as hers is. And that's,
look, I think one of the things that, Chuck, that she did, right, is she said, well, you know what, when I ran for CU Regent, I didn't have to run a hard campaign. So I don't think I need to run a hard campaign running for governor. She doesn't understand. These are two different positions. You know, one doesn't transfer over to the other. And right now, you know, there's not a major election going on that she can latch onto. You know, when she got elected in 2016 as a statewide CU regent, you know, there was other bigger names in the ballot that people were voting for. And so she got swept into that victory, I believe. And now she's claiming that, you know, she's the only statewide elected official in a Republican currently. And that's true. But you know what? And she wants people to believe that that means something. But I remind people, you know, Walker Stapleton got elected twice statewide as a state treasurer.
Right.
And he still lost.
Well, you know, the
that's
other
not
thing
something that,
that
yeah.
One thing that I think, I mean, you know, Greg, we've been supporters of you for a long time, and you've been running, as you said, for a long time. You got into this right away, and you said, I want to do this. You've been making the connections. And from the beginning, you answer every question that anyone asks you, hard, you know, question maybe. You may disagree with the person asking you, but you give a straight answer. You tell people where you're standing and where you stand, and people can either vote for you or not. You've said that. Here's what I believe in. Here's I stand for. And Heidi, what I've noticed is she's running a campaign where she doesn't really answer any questions except for she loves America and Colorado. And I think in this election in particular, people don't want that. People want to hear, what are you going to do? What do you stand for? And I think there's so much distrust right now of institutions and government. So people, you get a politician who's giving you wishy-washy non-answers. People are like, hey, I'm not interested in that. I want somebody who gives me a straight answer.
No, you're absolutely correct. You know, and again, you said it early, Julie, it's shifted over the last 6 months, over the last 8 months, that sentiment is surfacing to the top. And that's where they say, we're sick and tired of the same old, same old. You know, we try to give them an opportunity to represent us. And then we find out that they really don't care about us. Everything they said, they don't even do. And so they're at a point now where it's like, you know what? We're going to look for the candidate that we believe, the people believe, they're going to take care of us. They're going to fight for us. And those are the ones that when we ask them the tough questions, they're going to answer them. You know, we may not like their answer necessarily, but we will get an answer.
Yeah. And I think, you know, go ahead.
Did you have something to- final week look like?
Well,
do you sleep,
you know,
this right week? Or?
You know, this week, actually, we're interestingly enough, we're getting a lot of national attention. A lot of the national outlet are starting to reach out. You know, I still have a couple of meetings, meet and greets, and talking to people the rest of the week, but I'm slowing it down. You know, I got family coming in over the weekend, but, you know, like I said, we'll be doing something all the way through Monday. So, and right now people are already asking, you know, don't forget the weekend after the 28th is the 4th of July. And so everybody's already asking, hey, Greg, can you come out for our 4th of July event? Can you be out here at this barbecue?
So, well, let me, I mean, how, what are you hearing about the turnout? I haven't seen, I'll be honest. I know I'm holding my ballot and I'm turning it in on election day.
And I
think maybe a lot of people are doing that, but what are you kind of hearing or see, or does that give you guys headaches? I mean, what are you hearing and seeing?
You know, I get the reports, you know, on a daily basis. I think right now the amount of ballots that have been returned, the last number I saw was about 216,000, you know, across the state. Now in 2018, it was a little over 500,000 that got turned in. Yeah. So I think right now, you know, I think people are waiting. Julie, I think there's going to be a lot of people because they've heard that it's probably a safer, less risk if you turn in your ballot the day before or you turn it in the day of, you know. So that way, and they're not mailing it in. They're physically taking them to the clerk and recorder's office, you know.
Right.
That allows everybody to feel like, hey, there's no room here for anybody to mishandle the ballot. And I think that's what people are looking to do.
No, I think so. I would, I mean, that's what I'm thinking there too, you know, so, oh, over here, this is from Sandra. Some of our comments, Greg, when Greg was in Pueblo last, he gave the greatest speech, answered questions, et cetera. Heidi came, gave a mediocre speech and left. Our feeling was Greg was the one who really cared about us. And I think that's, I just think that's true. And again, I think that some of these campaigns, and I'm not just saying this, you know, because you came on our show. I really believe this. You've been saying and doing, and you've been running the same campaign from day one. And, you know, so the fact that all of a sudden people are now paying attention to what you're saying, it doesn't matter, right? Because you've been saying the same thing. But if you're a candidate like some of these establishment candidates where you don't want to answer questions, you don't want to talk about the election, you don't want to talk about Trump, you don't want to talk about abortion. Again, I just think people care and people are like, I want to hear what your answer is. And the fact that you don't give me one, I don't know. I just think it's good. I think the times have changed more than they may have realized.
No, you're absolutely right. And some have heard me more than once and they all come up to me, Julie, say, you know, Greg, I heard you 6 months ago. I heard you three months ago. And it's the same message. And I really like that. You're not changing your message. Your message is always complete. It's always thorough. And it's always about us, about how you care about us. And so, you know, I think that's where people are right now. They're tired of the wishy-washy answers or they don't even answer the question, you know, because that's what we've had. And that's why we've lost our country and people had faith, but they no longer have faith in those types of answers anymore. They really want people with character, with strong character, that are willing to tell people what they believe. And it comes across sincere. That's what they're looking for too, is sincerity. When you say words, you know, they can either tell you actually mean them or you're just saying them. And that's a big difference between me and my opponent. You know, you can hear the words that she uses and you know they're just words. You hear the words I'm using and you know it's coming from who I am. And that's a huge difference that people bring to me, to my attention all the time.
I would.
You know, amazing is between the, you know, governor's races these days and if they were 10 years ago, you know, that things like the Denver Post had a huge role in the primaries and in everything else. They could shift the story. They could give the Heidi Gonzales all the publicity that the person needed and then trash them after they won the primary. And now with there's a total absence of any generalized media. I mean, there's, you know, radio programs, podcasts, and other ones, but there isn't any dominant news cycle that controls things.
Right. No, you know, and so now it really is up to the candidates to go out there and be amongst the people and talk to them. Look, the only way I'm going to beat Governor Polis, and I know I'm going to beat him, is by having a word-of-mouth campaign. And I've started that. And that's what you can't stop a word-of-mouth campaign.
Right.
You can look
you
at ads, cancel. You can get mailers, but a word-of-mouth campaign, you can't shut down like you can shut down Facebook or Twitter.
Right. Well, and the mailers, I mean, I know, and I pay attention to them probably more than your average person, but you get just getting inundated with them anymore. So I don't even look at them, and you're right. But when your neighbor tells you, hey, this, or when they've heard you speak, let me just, because I know we just have a few more minutes with you. What about Polis? Do you think that he had, I mean, obviously, let me back up. We had Dick Wadhams on the other day, who we disagreed with about a lot of things, but he did say one interesting thing, I thought, and that is clearly the Democrats have done polling that indicates Polis is not as invincible as everybody might have thought. And I go back to the shift that's occurring in the country. What is your sense on that, and how worried do you think they are?
I'm going to tell you that's spot on. They are very worried about his ability to get reelected. And how do I know that? When I am out in, when I went to the Cinco de Mayo festival, when I went to Juneteenth and talked to the minority communities, these are strong Democrat communities. They're saying, we're not voting for him again. We're not. Wow. The crime, everything that he's done to our kids aren't learning, he shut down our businesses. You know, they're tired of him. And so when I tell them I'm running for governor, they're like, that's awesome. We're going to vote for you. And they tell me, look, we're not changing parties. I said, you don't need to change parties to vote for me, because I'm going to be the governor for those that vote for me and those that don't vote for me. But I need the votes to make the change. And they said, yeah, it's time for a change, Greg. So we're going to change him out and put you in. So if I'm hearing it from the strong counties that are strong Democrats, you know, I know their polling is showing the same thing. So, yes, they're very worried. And they're more worried about the fact that I'm going to be the nominee, because I'm going to take those votes away from them. No one else can. Right. I'm the one that's going to be taking them away from them.
No, I think you're right there. Well, and I think also, you know, he keeps trying to say things are not my fault. He's sort of doing the Biden thing, right? It's like he's done everything's wonderful. He never shut down any businesses and la, la, la. And I think people don't believe it. I mean, the trouble people like Polis have is we all lived through it. So you can't tell us that it didn't happen.
Right. And that's what he's trying to do, right? I mean, he's trying to tell us, like, this money that he's going to send out, right, late August, early September, right before the election, right, that he's giving it back to us. No, it's not your money. It's our money. It comes from the Taxpayer Bill of Rights. You should be doing this every year. And that's what I'm going to work on, is to make sure that every year we are staying within our means and we're giving money back to the people, because that's where it belongs. It doesn't belong with government. You know, government doesn't fix anything. They create more problems than any other institution. They don't solve things. They create problems. I'm going to go in there and I'm going to solve problems by making government less and making sure that small businesses, nonprofits, the faith-based communities, they're the ones taking care of the communities themselves.
All right.
Well, where can people send any last-minute support or do things for you?
Hey, go to Lopez2022.com. That's my website. And yes, you know, if you want to make a donation, we always take donations at whatever amount, but Lopez2022.com. And I look forward to visiting with you guys as the nominee for the Republican Party for governor come next week.
You got it. Greg, thank you so much. Good luck these last few days. We'll talk to you again as a nominee soon.
Yeah, take care, Greg.
There you go. Okay. Bye.
Thank you. I'd hear just some of the comments. Let's see. Democrat, this is from Charlene. Democrat Latinos will cross over and vote for Greg. Most of them are conservative. I think that's, I mean, we're seeing that in other places, right? And then Leo says, no, Polis was smart and pushed those decisions to local government to cover his butt. Some of it, but you know, but I still think he's in charge of the state, Leo. I think people seem to be holding Polis accountable. I mean, every time he tries to say something, at least on Twitter, where he puts something out about how great he is, everybody's like, yeah, but what about this? What about this? Like Greg said, he's trying to take credit for giving you your money back. It's like, well, it's my money to begin with. And then from Charlene, Greg is the perfect candidate, uniter, smart. I agree. I mean, Chuck, before we can, and let me say, Thomas, TJ, you can go ahead and call Daniel Greenfield here too. But what do you think? I think that, again, this shift in the country and what's happening now, when you look at the past 2 years, I think people look at Polis and they're like, we don't believe what you're telling us. You're not doing anything. You're not helping us. And I think things have really changed, where before you would have said, frankly, a Republican didn't have much of a chance. I don't know now.
Well, one of the things in politics, name recognition. It's always better to have better name recognition. And Greg it would look like would have, you know, a difficulty because he wouldn't get the Denver Post and everything else. Well, those don't matter. And the ads have given him an enormous amount of name recognition. So I think it's going to be, you never know what it'll be like on the 28th, but I'm really hopeful that Greg and Ron and all the other ones can really pull major offsets. So
I think, I hope so too. And then I think again, and then I hope it comes back to bite the Democrats, because I also suspect they're just living in their own little echo chamber, right? And they're like, oh, no one would vote for Greg Lopez, so let's support him. And then we'll beat Heidi Gnall. And instead Greg becomes a candidate and beats them. I just hope that happens. So, hey, so we're lucky to have with us again, Daniel Greenfield. Daniel has a great column out. He writes for Front Page Magazine, a permanent shortage of everything. Hey, Daniel, welcome to the show again. Glad to have you on.
It's good to be back. Thank you for having me on again.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, talking about a permanent shortage of everything, I have to share, this is a personal experience. Like, we have a little boy, he likes watermelon gum, right? The extra watermelon gum. I was at the grocery store 2 days ago, couldn't find it anywhere. You know how they have it when you check out, they've got all the little racks with the gum, couldn't find it. Mm-hmm. I was at Target this morning, couldn't find any watermelon gum. And I asked the lady at the checkout stand, she goes, oh yeah. She says, we haven't seen it in a while. She says, you can't get cinnamon either. She says, I have no idea why, but she says, any of the fruit kind of gums or cinnamon gums, it's like, what? I mean, when you can't even get cinnamon gum, the globalists have destroyed everything, I think, Daniel.
It's Putin's fault.
Yeah, it's the Putin stole all the watermelon chewing gum. But this is the fantastic globalist economy that they want us on. You know, we used to have OPEC, and OPEC would be able to cut us off at the pump. But with the globalists, everybody can now cut us off. So there's a war in Russia, Ukraine. Of course it affects us. And there's a virus in China, and of course it massively affects us. And just anywhere anything happens, it affects us. For example, a few years ago, hard drives suddenly shot up in price, and along with computers, because it was flooding in Taiwan, and Taiwan controls a lot of the hardware manufacturing. The global big idea was that we're going to spread our economy out across the world. We would have these massive global supply chains. We would move production and manufacturing out of America. And that means that we are dependent on every other country in the world, and we either have to maintain troops everywhere to keep the peace, or we face empty shelves and economic crises whenever things start to happen in the world.
Yeah, well, why don't you explain? Because you did a great job in your article at Front Page Magazine, A Permanent Shortage of Everything, of explaining how the globalists created this and maybe, to give them the benefit of the doubt, thought it was going to be a good idea, but it was just doomed to failure from the beginning. Why don't you walk us through that?
It was absolutely doomed to failure, but they were, you know, if you go back to the era right after the collapse of the Soviet Union, they were talking about this exciting new world order, and this was what it meant. There would be no more borders. There would be a global system. Everything would run through a global economy. And no country that actually was part of this global economy would want to fight with another country. Back in the 90s, they had something called the Golden Arches Theory of Conflict Prevention, which was a fancy way of saying that no two countries which had McDonald's would ever go to war. And, you know, of course, we see that's absolutely not true. And Russia and Ukraine both have McDonald's. They're still capable of going to war. This idea that being part of this global system would make everybody want the same things that we want, that failed in Iraq, it failed in Afghanistan, it failed over and over again because most of the rest of the world has their own agendas. And when we become dependent on them, when we outsource our economy to them, then we're involved in all these conflicts and we face constant shortages because, you know, it's like the little things. There's a tampon shortage because cotton has now become quite expensive. We get fertilizer from Ukraine, so that affects price of bread, affects the price of pretty much anything agricultural. We've got plastic shortages because of the situation with oil prices. And, you know, we've got crazy things like chip shortages in part because neon comes out of Ukraine. So it's a ridiculous situation where our economy is dependent on this global supply chain that never actually holds up.
But they've set it in motion. And I think Trump was doing a little bit to take some of the stuff back, and Biden has reversed that. My sense is they don't care that the rest of us have shortages. These global elites, they're like, hey, it's working for us. We can go in our yacht anywhere we want in our private jet. So we're not bothered. I mean, do you think they care? Do you think they want to fix it? Or is this actually getting to where they want to go?
No, many of them will argue this was actually good for the environment. forcing Americans to pay $5, $6, $7 a gallon for gas is going to force them out to stop driving or to buy electric cars. Raising the price of meat, which is now just outright horrifying, as you know, I think most people have encountered, that's going to get more people to stop eating meat and eat soy. So all this is good for the planet. And by good for the planet, they mean that it's going to make us poor, it's going to make us more dependent on the government, and it's going to make us less able to make our own choices.
What did I read a thing talking about the meat thing? I saw Bill Gates has become like the number one buyer of farmland around the country, right? And he's the one pushing we need to get rid of meat. But coincidentally, Bill Gates has purchased all of this farmland. Now we'll have to go crops, like use of the soy and stuff to replace it. So somebody somewhere is going to continue getting rich, I suppose.
No, absolutely. They want us to go without, but it's a very different story for them. Jeff Bezos, the guy behind Amazon, has his own Great Reset Como initiative, and this is a guy who owns a mega yacht, but he's envisioning this world where most people are going to walk to work or bike to work. Meanwhile, he has a special yacht just for his helicopter. So the way that they live and the way that we live are going to be very different.
Right. Do you see it?
Is there any hope in that their vision of the economy and the world will not necessarily be that of the future?
Well, the great mistake that the left always makes is they assume that the future is set, that once things go a certain way, it's going to keep going that way. This is what Obama used to call the right side of history. No, there's no right side of history. History goes back and forth. It goes up and down. A lot of things repeat themselves. So we've been here before. The left inflicts incredible damage on the economy and our standard of living. They've been doing it for over 50 years now. And we're all living with the consequences in one way or another, but it's never going to be this perfect controlled system that they want. And we know that because they've tried it. They've tried it in the Soviet Union. They're trying it still in China. And all the time, it always falls apart.
What, in the meantime, do you think that people are, because right now, you know, as you said, people see the meat prices, you can see it, it's happening, you know, and you're right in front of them. Do you think that, like the midterm elections or the presidential election, is that the kind of thing that can change it? Or are we too far down this road to turn things? Is it like the Titanic, right? It's going to, we can see the iceberg coming, but it's going to take too much to turn it?
No, it's possible to change it. The question is, do we have the leadership that it's necessary to do that? That's always been the big question. No, for too long, we've had leaders who were content to manage the decline, who were content to tell us, this is the way it is. We can make some small changes, but we're going down this track. And the Republicans adopt whatever the left was saying 10 years ago, and they start defending it as the new normal. This is what we've seen far too often. So the question is, can we have genuine revolutionary leadership that's going to actually take back America as opposed to just claiming that they can manage the decline better than the left can?
Do you see Trump running again, and do you think he can make a difference? It seemed like he kind of made a difference the first time around. What about from your perspective?
It's pretty clear he wants to run again. I think it's been a mixed bag. There have been things that he did very right. There are other things that are just were not done. And I think we've all seen how bad the lockdowns were, how bad letting Fauci run the economy and the country was. So I don't know. I'm not in the business of predicting what individuals are going to do. I would hope that if he does run and if he wins, that he's going to have learned some things from the last time around. And I hope beyond that, because, you know, you can't rely on one man to do everything. So we need a lot of leadership. We need a generation of leadership. We need leaders in the state level. We need leaders in Congress. We need local leaders. So, you know, whatever Trump does or doesn't do, we need a whole generation to turn things around.
Do you have any views on any other leaders that you see either in the United States or internationally that you are encouraged by?
No, during the height of the pandemic, I'm in California these days. I went to Florida and it was like going to a whole other world when the work's a whole lot better. You know, I think Governor DeSantis has done a great job. We'll see if that's something he could at some point do nationally. No, we do have good leaders, but the problem is we just don't have enough of them and things aren't organized enough. But I'd like to think that's beginning to change because people are seeing just how bad this is, how big the other side's agenda is. You know, when you actually are going to the store and you're not seeing food there, that is a huge wake-up call. It's not abstraction. So much of politics is about abstractions. It's about things that don't really touch us, maybe make us angry when we see them in our email or hear them on the radio. When it actually hits home, that's a game changer.
Right. What about in Europe and EU? Because I think you were talking about, I mean, I think the great dream there, right, was that it would all be this one thing. And then all of a sudden, they, you know, they go to, Russia goes to war with Ukraine and Russia turns off the oil. Germany's back to burning coal. Meanwhile, the Russia ruble, I mean, our sanctions didn't seem to have done anything. Do you think, are they going to wait? And I think what Macron is kind of taking some hits too. Do you see, I mean, it seems to me that change this whole globalist thing. It's, yes, it has to happen in the United States, but it sure would be helpful if it started turning around in other countries too. Do you see that happening?
We saw incremental changes. Brexit was a pretty big message that things can't go on the way they have. The war in Ukraine could be a mixed blessing because the Europeans are now starting to see that the way they were doing things does not work. That the, I mean, they invested in environmentalism and green energy in a much bigger way than we did. And it's backfired on them in a very big way because all it did was make them dependent on Russia, and they've been forced to see that they've had their noses rubbed in it. They've bought into this whole internationalism, and now they're seeing how weak it is, that without the America doing the heavy lifting, they're helpless and impotent. So are people waking up? I would hope that they're waking up. There are some signs of that. I think Americans also need to see that what Biden is pushing now, this is what Europe is like now. If we actually get to where Obama and Biden, the Democrats, want us to be 10 years from now, we can look at Europe today and see just how bad that is. A military that doesn't work, an economy that does not exist, and becoming dependent on your worst enemies for basic energy. Now, this is what they want for us, and Europe already did it.
You know, and as you said, I think it only will be even worse because at least Europe has the United States to do the heavy lifting. But when the United States is in the exact same boat, then what China's going to do? I mean, then we're just screwed. What are there? Are there yeah, well, yeah, we don't want to go there. That's too depressing to think about. Well, let me ask you, I know you've got just, we got just a couple more minutes with you. Anything else you're working on that you want to tell folks about or, you know, looking at the midterms, any thoughts on that?
Well, the midterms are looking promising. The question is, are we going to have that generation of leadership? And are we going to have people who are detail-focused on everything? You know, one of the articles I'm working on right now is just how much more money we're putting into Afghanistan even after the Taliban takeover. We're looking at well over $1 billion, and there's an actual report from the Special Inspector General in Afghanistan documenting how we've got over 30 off-the-books aid programs still running to Afghanistan benefiting the terrorists. You know, it's this kind of thing we need to be on top on. Any leaders need to be on top on because we're bleeding money even while Americans are struggling to our worst enemies.
Well, you're right. Let's go over that. So that's insane. I mean, we're sending billions of dollars to Ukraine. We're still sending money to the Taliban in Afghanistan. That's the Biden administration okaying that?
Yeah, they're okaying that. You've got Samantha Power running USAID. So it's actually even worse over there than it was during the Obama era. That's true across the Biden administration because the same people running things under Obama are still in charge, and some of them are now pointing at even worse people. So everything that happened under Obama is now being doubled down on.
Oh, what is their goal in continuing to fund then stuff in Afghanistan? I mean, I'm assuming they have an ultimate purpose there or some sort of insidious motive.
Above the board, they claim, of course, that they're there advocating for human rights. In practice, of course, they're funding America's enemies as they have for 8 years under Obama, as in many ways they did even for 4 years under Trump, because so much of what went on was not controlled, and they managed to keep getting their agenda through. I mean, these are people who believe that America is evil, that our enemies are actually the ones who are the victims of our shenanigans. And so they are very happy to fund the destruction of America, even when it comes to Al-Qaeda, even when it comes to the Taliban, because they believe that America deserves everything that's coming to it.
Wow. All right. Well, Daniel, thank you for your time. And people can read everything at Front Page Magazine. That's the best place to go to get all your columns.
Absolutely.
All right, sir. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your
appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate it. We'll talk to you later, too. Thank you.
As always, my pleasure.
All right. Daniel Green for there, guys. I really recommend A Permanent Shortage of Everything. I read that and I'm like, we're doomed.
We're doomed.
And again, it all goes back to, you know, what we've been saying on this show for a while now, and that is it's not accidental, which is what he's saying too. Well, Chuck, I mean, you wanted to talk too, and so we have a little bit of time here, about the some of the primaries that went on yesterday, right?
Yeah, down in Georgia, everybody's kind of saying, well, Donald Trump is no longer the force he was. Vernon Jordan, he endorsed one congressional seat, he lost, and other ones they lost. And, you know, they wonder why in Republican primaries. It's because they're not Republican primaries. You don't register by party in Georgia. So any Democrat, anybody can vote in any primary they want to. And so they just overwhelmingly, you know, the Democrats go and they go, okay, we'll just vote for Kemp and Rothbergers and all that. So it's even here in Colorado, at least you have to switch parties to unaffiliated to do it. There you can just be a Democrat and vote away in the primary. And so some of those votes are like 70 to 20, which is really kind of its own way. If you didn't realize the system they got, you'd kind of go, wow, that's amazing.
Well, and Charlene is saying exactly, Chuck. Well, yeah, and I mean, and the mainstream media, like you said, it is kind of funny that they all seem to be so hyper-focused on Trump that they keep handicapping him, right? He wins one, he loses one, and then every time he loses, they say, oh, he has no more power, then he wins, and they're like, Republicans are still being, you know, Trump's a puppet master. I mean, they spin it every way they want to. What? Is somebody there? Uh-oh, somebody's mic is on. Hello? Somebody's, I hope they found their cat. I hope they found their cat there. But I think, I think you're right. I also think, again, people can think for themselves, right? I think sometimes Trump's endorsement makes a difference, but sometimes, like you said, Democrat meddling, or do you think, what about in some of the races where there weren't Democrat meddling and people don't vote the way Trump suggested?
You know, there usually is. Trump has a pretty good record, except where you know, the other party can get in and vote for the moderate. He certainly did fine in Arizona and other places where you can't do that. But Georgia is really kind of an amazing system. And, you know, there are these firms that specialize in getting Democrats elected to Republican positions. There's a whole cottage.
Well, we've done shows on that, right? There are companies, and there's some of them here in Colorado, right, where they take a candidate who, I mean, it's really a Republican in name only. It's not just a squishy Republican. It's somebody who's actually a Democrat, right, that runs as a Republican, and they have a whole, they have, like you said, they have a whole lobby consultant system set up to handle that, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's an amazing process going through. But, you know, we've got that big one, the 28th here in Colorado, and I'm just praying that the grassroots people do well. And it isn't just a happy day for the establishment, because I think then we really, if they sweep the board, I think that'll, you know, you won't have any PCPs or anyone else for the general election.
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see the number of unaffiliated voters. I don't get the sense, and maybe I'm wrong, that the Democrats have quite the machine for the turnout the vote effort in Colorado that say they have in Georgia. At least, I mean, what's your sense there?
Well, they have had that when Polis ran a ballot harvesting campaign. When he got elected the first time, I don't know.
But that's for the general election. You know what I mean? I think it takes a whole different effort to gear up for a primary. So I guess I'm wondering, I mean, this is what my thought is that I don't know. I think Democrats are hoping that they can convince a whole bunch of people to, again, vote for the candidate that they think is going to be the weakest. I just don't know how effective that's going to be. What do you think?
It's you know, I hope it's incredibly effective for the June 28th primary, and not so effective in November.
Well, and this is them. So explain. So Charlene is saying, did Trump endorse a rhino in Georgia instead of Mo Brooks? Why don't you explain what happened in Georgia there?
No, that was Alabama. He endorsed Britt, who was really a Chamber of Commerce type person. Because he felt Mo Brooks turned on him when he said, you know, you shouldn't go back and redo the 2020 election. And I think he picked a really kind of, she's not going to be much of a conservative at all. So that was
Brilliant. And this is from Sandra. In Pueblo County, many, quote, unaffiliated voters are receiving a Democrat ballot, not Democrat and Republican ballots. An error? I haven't heard that, Sandra. I'll have to look into that, because my guess would be I guess there has been some questions about that. You're right. I mean, my guess would be it's not an error. I think you're right. Christy Burton Brown, to her credit, I'll give her a little bit of credit for that, has been complaining about that. No, that's not a mistake. I wouldn't imagine that's not a mistake at all, any more than the ballots they send. I mean, you know, the not cleansing the voter rolls, the, not verifying signatures. None of that is an accident. So we'll have to see. But I think, Chuck, though, again, I think you're right. I think that what's going to happen is Greg Lopez and the Ron Hanks, the Democrat funding of these sort of dark money commercials, I think are going to end up boosting their name recognition way beyond what it would have been otherwise. And I think what's going to happen, the Democrats, I think they're miscalculating. I think people are going to go ahead and vote for a Greg Lopez and vote for a Ron Hanks because they're sick of Jared Polis and they're sick of Michael Bennett. Now, is it going to be enough? That obviously remains to be seen. But I think that's a risky game they're playing. And I think they're misunderstanding.
How much money they must have to be able to be doing that, you know, running anti-Joe O'Day commercials and everything else. I mean, Joe is easy to run a negative one on, but just amazing stuff. But we'll see. One more, less than a week, so...
Yeah, less than a week. Okay, well, that's good. I can tell you need to check, needs to get back to the newspaper. That'll wrap it up for us here on Wednesday. Coming up on Party Friday, I think we don't have any guests scheduled yet. Maybe we'll just take calls and comments and things like that. I always feel kind of bad when we have guests. We don't get to read all of the great comments and people don't call in. But who knows? I mean, there's so much going on these days. Times are just crazy. So, Chuck, back to work at the newspaper.
Bye.
Thank you to Daniel Greenfield and Greg Lopez, all the great guys on Zoom. We love having you there. Remember, you can catch all our shows at chuckandjulie.com. You can also subscribe to us there. We appreciate all of that. And we'll see you on Party Friday.
Take care, everybody.
Take care.